there. It's Lisa, the love coach, Lisa Concepcion, and I am psyched to be on Awaken Nation with Brad Zolas.
A huge shift is taking place on planet Earth. People seem to be waking up. Tired of the way things used to be, they are creating something brand new and changing the world we live in. My name is Brad Zolas, and I get to sit down with the next generation of idea makers, the disruptors, and the game changers. Everyday people, just like you and me, from all over, who are doing amazing things. Welcome to Awakened Nation.
Lisa, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hello, hello.
Did you make it through the hurricane and everything? You're okay?
I'm okay. It missed us by like 50 miles, 45, 50 miles, thank God. And my heart goes out to the many friends I have that are picking up the pieces literally and, kind of making some changes in their life due to natural disaster. Or maybe not natural.
Who knows? Hey, you and I think differently than everybody else.
Question everything, right?
Yeah, contrarian, as we call it, ladies and gentlemen. I've been dying to get you on the show, and we're going to talk about some of this because, like, you're living through the hurricane, but a week before, they never covered the hurricane in Puerto Rico, which caused this huge damage. So we're going to talk about the news, trolls, but most importantly, how you became this relationship coach and being a New Yorker. We were talking about that in the green room before we started. Being a guy. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm going to read your bio real quick. Lisa Concepcion is a certified professional love life strategist, coach, dating and relationship expert, and the founder of LoveQuestCoaching.com. She helps type A, successful, driven people who struggle with their love lives to heal and make the energetic shift necessary to thrive at love. Lisa has offered her expertise, tips, and insights in top media outlets such as Reader's Digest, Parade, Cosmopolitan, The New York Post, NBC News, Business Insider, EliteDaily.com, and Bustle.com. A lover of content creation, and I can attest to this. I love your content, by the way. Thanks. Lisa offers loads of free, helpful, and entertaining information via her YouTube channel with over 800 videos and her private Facebook group called Self Love Club. Her weekly Love Blast micro coaching email and daily posts across social media platforms are also pretty exciting. And that's how you caught my attention, by the way. You were, you would walk around. First of all, you're stunning. You're beautiful. We all know that. And you like to, you were wearing a bikini without any, apologies. But here's what caught me more than anything. You're no bullshit, no nonsense, in your face stuff about love and life. And we're going to talk about one of those things because I was talking about it earlier before we started. But let me tell you something about Lisa. Lisa's coaching style delivers a results-driven experience that is efficient, intuitive, effective, supportive, and empowering. And you can connect with Lisa at lovequestcoaching.com, where she offers a complimentary love life assessment. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. This is years in the making. So let's get into it.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, how did you get into this? Because you caught my attention when you were saying, hey, guys, if you're 50 and older and you want to date some young chick, which, a lot of guys are doing, you do realize you have to take a nap before you go out dancing. I was like, motherfucker, so truthful. I hate you. So let's start there.
Okay. Well, a lot of the early post that you saw was just basically me going through my own experiences. I lived in New York my whole life up until 39, New York, New Jersey metro area. I was in the matrix, so to speak. Yeah. And then I moved to South Beach, Miami once my now ex-husband decided he wanted to separate. So I moved to South Beach. I was just inspired by a little voice in my soul that said, go to South Beach, you'll be happy there. So I did. And I embarked on this growth journey, and the beginning stages of it was a lot of escapism. So it was a lot of partying on boats and being in a bikini, running around South Beach, going to the beach, working on freelance public relations assignments from colleagues that I had still in New York that would just throw business my way. Hey, do this. So it was very scrappy. I had sold my house. I was just in a reinvention midlife crisis state. And at the time I was, you know, 39 years old, 40 years old, 42 years old, right? This horrible, you know, caterpillar to butterfly thing was happening. I was going through a lot of pain in my life to grow from it and then transform into something different. So when I did that, I had the fortuitous run-in with Grant Cardone. I became his director of public relations and marketing. Very universal lining things up serendipitously to meet that man. And everything I learned from him within the year and a half that I worked with him prepped me for the work I do now. So fast forward, I end up getting divorced. I am heartbroken at the lowest low of my life, feeling awful. And all of this is playing out in my posts and my, you know, growth journey very publicly on social media. And a following ensued and people started to relate to my journey. And I was like, you know, being really honest about what I was going through and, you know, dating after being married for 17 years, right? There was no match.com. There was no swipe right back in the 90s, right? When I met my husband, I was 20. So here it is, 1992, right? So when he said to me at 2 o'clock, I'm going to come here and pick you up at 7 p.m. after your last class from college, you didn't text. There was no texting. There was nothing. He gave you your word. I will see you later. Meet me by whatever this. And there's his little car pulling up. You didn't have this anxiety of now. Did you leave yet? I'm leaving now. I'm at the restaurant. I'll see you soon. None of
Where
that. Nothing.
Where are you?
Yeah. What's your ETA? There was none of this. It was a different time and our minds were done, you know, wired differently. So that being said, we go into my growth journey. And in through that, like many coaches, many people who, like, you know, they call it light workers, all this stuff, they often are called to serve in that way after they themselves go through this like dark labyrinth of awful in their life.
Yeah.
Whether it's heartbreak, whether it's a weight loss journey, health scare, you know, people who become fitness trainers and wellness people, yogis, they all can trace it back to a moment in their life where they were put up against the ropes and they were brave enough to say, okay, the change has to start with me. Let me dig into myself, do some shadow work, heal a bunch of stuff. And in my case, it was looking at a codependent nature, a wiring, a matrix programming that happened to me and deciding like, this isn't the truth of who I am. I wasn't put here to suffer. I wasn't here to be heartbroken. I was put here by a benevolent creator to thrive. However, the free will of my decisions impact my ability to experience either joy or pain in my life. So once I took that on, then I became super powerful. I was like, wait a minute, I'm responsible for all outcomes of my life. That means the good ones too.
Wait a minute.
So, okay, let's get into that, right? Like, let's start to create the life I want. And who must I become to be a match to that life? So that's where the work started. And then I started to take that public. And then people started to want to like talk to me and pay me for my time. And then I felt this ethical responsibility to get certified as a coach because people were paying me money and I didn't really know what I was doing. And I'm like, wait, I need to like go about this the right way. So in 2017, I enrolled in IPEC, the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching at FIU, was the designated university for me to go to get my certification. It was this wonderful 10-month journey, and I was coached by master coaches. That's how I learned. And then I had to coach them. And it was just amazing, transformative experience just in that. And then to apply it to a business that just makes you become this self-reliant, no longer working for the man, like you're doing it on your own. It's scary. And there's a whole thing that has to come with that growth too, as I'm sure you've been through.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of facing your inner beliefs about money and about, you know, sales and all this. And, you know, and you get uncomfortable. And I remember being in a mastermind group, super expensive mastermind group, year-long mastermind group. And they showed us the metamorphosis of a caterpillar to a butterfly. And I mean, the caterpillar faces death like three times at least within this process. It is so uncomfortable. It is so horrible. But that little caterpillar is so committed to this new beingness that it will become, right? So it starts as caterpillar and it sees in its brain, in its mind, its heart, its essence, I know I'm put here to be a butterfly and I'm going to fly and have colors and be something completely different. But right. to go to become it, he has to, or, you know, little caterpillar has to endure awful. I mean, yeah. awful. So that really served as a reminder to me, like, you know, Lise, if this little teeny, you know, caterpillar was given the stuff from the creator to make it become something different, then you have that same thing in you, as does everybody. They just have to be willing to commit to it, to commit yeah. to who am I over there? Who is that chick? How is she living? And then the prayer becomes, who must I become? What must I know? What knowledge must I acquire to be aligned with the version of me over there? And help me to have fun along that learning yeah. process to become that. This way I'm not, you know, and you know what? Yes, it's going to be uncomfortable. Yes, it will be things that are very confronting, but it's just like little caterpillar. You're going to get uncomfortable and you're going to tackle it and face it. And then you get stronger. And that's yeah. how you get your wings. And then you fly like butterfly and you're, you know, helping the world.
I love that you talked about shadow work. People don't realize the emperor moth, when they were experimenting and they were, you know, doing whatever, this scientist, he saw it struggling to get out of the cocoon and he decided to help it. And he found out the moth came out misshapen, tiny wings, couldn't fly, and it eventually yeah. died. Well, here, this tight ring around the cocoon that it's struggling to get out of pushes the fluid, the blood, everything past its shoulders into what would become its wings. And if you interrupt that process, the moth doesn't come out properly and dies. And it's the same with human beings. And this is why, this is another reason why your work caught my attention. You talked about shadow work. I spent probably 35, 40 years, lived in New York City during this time, by the way, and I was into spiritual unfoldment. And I was around a lot of people who are just like, you know, they're so Zen, man, you know. And I was like, no, I didn't have the best childhood. So I started to face my demons and I started to face who I was. So I completely resonate with what you're talking about. And folks, if you're listening, you know, it's really great to sit there and say, hey, let it go. Well, how do you let it go? How do you work on it? How do you become that chick over there? As you said,
right.
And in this day and age, that could be a guy asking, how can I become that chick over there? You know, but it
boils that.
Yeah, but it does boil down to what are you willing to do to get there? What are you willing to do to beat up the old you to get to the other side? You know, it's like when I stepped into a dojo for the first time, I was 45 years of age, never trained, never was an athlete, didn't do any of that crap, just lifted weights. Hey, how you doing? You know, that kind of stuff. But I was willing to lose 1,000 fights. I was willing to break, get broken bones. You know, I've had 3 broken ribs, 2 in tournament, 1 in training. Are you willing to have the chutzpah? There we are using a New York term. Do you have the balls, the chuspa, the whatever?
The cojones.
The cojones to really be, you know, destroy the old you to embrace the new you by facing the bullshit you tell yourself about yourself and also the programming that you receive. Let's talk about that, because we spend the first 12 years of our life being told what to be, what to do, how to do it. And we're fitting into our culture. We're fitting into the world and we're trying to be accepted and loved. And then we start to go through life and go, wait a minute, something isn't lining up with what I believe and what I'm thinking. And you, like myself, or myself like you, I went through a divorce and I realized, oh my God, I still had all this dysfunctional crap that I had been living in and didn't know it.
Yes.
So this is a constant road here of self-development. So let's dig in. Let's talk about this, because you are the expert here, not me.
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, like definitely there are monumental things that happen to people that inspire their inward search. So we live this existence, like you said, at the beginning of our lives. Mommy, I want to be a ballerina. And then mommy puts you in dancing school. And then after the first day, you're like, mommy, I don't like ballet. I want to play softball. And then you go into that, right? So we, in our early years, we're programmed by our parents, who received programming through the institutions that they were exposed to. So it becomes like a right way of being, but who put that forth? So when you start to do this work and you start to ask those bigger questions of why do I believe what I believe, that's when, you know, the universe opens up and then you're like, oh, wow, what's this thing in my feet about the Rockefellers? What is that about? What does that have to do about? What does that have to do with being a woman in 2015? So here I am reading rabbit hole after rabbit hole, one after the next. And not only was I learning and healing myself, I was learning about how I got here, how these the public education founded and funded by Rockefeller, what that connects to as a woman, as the feminist movement. I was born in 71. There's a reason for that, right? Why wasn't I was born when I was, as were you, as was everybody watching this, listening to this, for a particular moment in time, purposely, because you had to go on a journey and arrive to the place you are right now to be able to withstand and benefit from and internalize it and give to the collective. I know this is like high Zen stuff to explain the question, that's the thing, but I'm thinking your audience can like pick up what I'm pointing down, right?
Yep.
So like people are probably, you know, listening to this nodding like, oh my God, 100%. Like if I didn't go through my divorce, I wouldn't know what the hell the Great Reset even was, right? Like because it's just about information of the collective.
Yeah.
And you don't get to have that knowledge. It's occulted. You don't get to have that hidden occulted knowledge until you are brave enough to ask, what is truly hiding inside of me? What is blocking me from my own potential as a human? Why do I believe as I believe? Is this, let me test this theory. And who put this in my head that I'm supposed to go to college and graduate and get a job, and why? Like, who says this? And then, you know, I remember being like, you know, mid-20s. And I was so hell-bent on being married by age 30 and like having house. I had a whole, like I called it, you know, the to-do list of life. And it was like, okay, you're going to go and you're going to go to high school and then you're going to graduate that and go to college. You're going to graduate that. And then you're going to get a job and then you're going to work in the job and you're going to work your way up the ladder and you're going to get married and you're going to buy a house and you're going to have babies and you're going to have babies and you're going to have first baby is going to be a boy and you're going to have them when you're 32. And then the next baby will be a girl. You'll have her at 34. Somewhere in that, you're going to end up making like, you know, $120,000 a year.
Absolutely.
Doing
something. It's just going to happen.
How this is gonna go. Now, wouldn't you know, because the mind is powerful and it does create your experience, I did achieve all of those things except for the children. Why? Because at 32 years old, I sat down with my then husband and I said, all right, so where are you with this whole kid thing? Because here's where I'm at. I am an all or nothing kind of person. If I'm going to be mom, I am full on mom. I am not going to be half ass mom and half ass
Wait. Did you just say you're all in? You're 100% person? Because I was just going to say, gee, I don't see that in you.
Well, I was thinking at that age, I was like, you know, I'm getting promoted at work. I'm like, this is good. I'm making money. We're going to Mexico. We're doing all these things. We're renovating our house. And I'm like, wow, like, this is kind of nice. What happens? You become a slave to money, right? Yeah. And it's a trap. Then you start to say, okay, well, I have this calling in me of the kind of mom that I would want to be. And it was 100% mom. And maybe like side hustle, writing, doing something creative that I thoroughly enjoyed, right? But when I went to husband at this time, he was very ambivalent about this major, major decision, right? Like a man would know, you would think, by the time they're, you know, 30, you know, I want to be a father. I want that experience. I want to raise children. He was Lisa. If you want to have five, we'll have five. If you want to have two, we'll have two. If you want to have none, that's fine too. I'm like, oh, so you're completely leaving it to me? And he's like, well, it's your body. It's you're the one who's going to have to go through the transformation of this. And, you know, the whole thing of being mother. And I said, but you're not listening to me. Like, are you cool? And are you prepared as a man to like have me be like, I'm not working anymore. I'm going to be with my babies and I'm going to do that life. But I, at that time, didn't want that. None of that appealed to me. Because I was in the matrix of consumer stuff, bye, programmed, super programmed by the, you know, the behind the curtain evils that run this world.
Yeah, the wizard of Oz. Yeah,
exactly. Who, as you know, is nothing but some fat, useless dude behind a curtain. Ridiculous. Right. So I said to myself, listen. I'm going to continue working this kid thing. I thought I was like a rebel, right? I thought I was a rebel. Meanwhile, what was I? Just another tax paying woman who got scammed by the system, right? Rockefeller. He funded the feminist movement.
Yeah. And you remember why he funded the feminist
movement? Eugenics.
Aaron Russo said it best. He says the feminist movement wasn't about giving women power. It was about getting taxpayers. 50% of the population didn't pay taxes because they were taken care of. Men could, you know, go to work, and on $35,000 a year, you could have a house, a car, two kids, and life was a lot simpler because your dollar went further. Well, they sat there and they went, wait a minute, women aren't working. We want the tax dollar. And by the way, folks, we're not sitting here and saying women shouldn't be empowered to go become an executive. We're not saying any of that. The push came out of nowhere at the exact same time that they got us off the gold standard and inflation shot up through the roof. This
Which
is all
was when I was born.
Yeah, Keynesian economics. It started in 1971. And Elizabeth Warren actually has a fantastic speech about the upcoming death of the middle class. Watch it. She breaks down every single thing that changed. But here's where she misses the point. It was all government that did this. She refuses to ever look at that because that's what was the triggering factor. We had to all go to work because the cost of living shot through the roof. Ask your parents, folks. Oh, if you have anybody, grandparents.
Of that. I mean, think about it. Anybody born in the 70s will know that divorce shot up. My parents got divorced. I was 3 years old. What happened? My mom was forced to go to work, right? She didn't have that intention. She was old school. She wanted to have three kids, live in the suburbs, and her man do the work, right? Cultivating and values and instilling the values in the kids and all this.
Right.
And my mother was pushed into a different thing. Right.
She could back then. She could have stayed at home. She had a choice, but it was
after
economical.
After 71, yep. No more. Yep. But then what happened was latchkey kid. I became part of that Gen X generation where you're 9 years old, you're given a key to your house, and it says when you get home from school, you do your homework and you eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and you watch Tom and Jerry. And then when you're done, you can maybe go out with your, you know, your little friends on the block and play kick the can in the street. Like, this is suburbia, Long Island, New York, where I grew up. And I had the good fortune, my God, of having a childhood, when I think this also prepared me for what's coming, is my parents divorced. So weekends, I was in New York City. I was in the Bronx, Brooklyn, New York City, Manhattan, right?
Yep.
But my weekdays were in the burbs, in Levittown. And there's a whole historical thing about Levittown and the government and all that, which is fascinating. And I researched it. Rabbit hole, amazing. But anyway, I was the benefactor of seeing multicultural. Like, I was Puerto Rican kid going to suburbia school. There was maybe like, I don't know, five other Hispanic kids in my entire school, right? So I had to deal with, why is your skin so brown? Like, why do you look like you look? Are you an Indian? Like, you look like Pocahontas. Like, what's your deal? Like, I was, you know, from another planet.
Yeah.
But it toughened me. It gave me coping skills. It, you know, imagine if like I was in school in, you know, the 70s and 80s and teachers were like, you can't say this, you can't say that. And what's your pronoun and all that? It's like head spinning. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that, I've noticed this. I went through a lot of trouble as a kid, you know, with my mom being bipolar and my father, you know, he was the classic Hungarian, you know, dad, I don't care about your feelings. You know, he wasn't getting into that touchy feely stuff. My mom actually wound up in a, what they used to call a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And she was drugged up and I went to see her. And when we came home, I was in tears. You know, here's my mom on these drugs. And how did my dad handle it? He goes, hey, buddy, what do you want for dinner? You know, that's how my dad did it. That's how that generation dealt with it. But the reality is we were given this false reality. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening right now, this is part and parcel for the kind of coaching that Lisa does, because we have to break through the matrix. We have to break through this illusion that you have in your head. Where did you get these facts about yourself? Where did you get these lies that you were told? Like, I believed when I was growing up that I was fat. Okay. And I look at pictures of myself and I'm thinking, what the hell was my mother thinking, calling me husky? Okay. I had six pack abs, you know, that, and everything. Well, I started to do the work on it and I started to realize it. My mother saw masculinity welling up in me now. And she called me husky, which was a term for muscular men at the time. Okay. And I misread it as my mom's calling me fat. And so letting go of that was literally like shedding 25 pounds to it's a big deal. So where did we get this idea that as a woman, you got to have it all? You know, you got to, Ellen Reddy is singing that song, you know, Ellen. You know, I am woman, you know,
hear me roar.
Yeah. All this is being put forth. What was being placed in your mind at that time during your formative years, folks? And how did you adjust in order to live it? Okay. So it's sort of like, you know, I'm like you, I'm contrarian. So I started questioning stuff right when I got to New York City. I was 21 when I got to New York City in 1984. And you were talking about suburbia, you know, living in the urban, you know, out on Long Island, things like this. E.T. was the first movie to really show the latchkey kids. And this is where we got microwavable food. This is where we got, you know.
That you brought up the E.T. So this is interesting. They were conditioning us through entertainment our whole life.
Yeah.
And
predictive programming, it's called.
Predictive programming. And so I was 11 when E.T. came out. It was, I think, I was 11. It was 1982, I believe. Distinctly remember this because I can really relate to Elliot. I felt like a kindred thing. And instead of an ET, it was for me dogs. Like, I felt the way that connection with animals, with dogs since little. Anyway, after reflecting on it later in life, with knowing and being awakened to the predictive programming through entertainment, it was like, wow, basically they made the latchkey kid happen so that they can isolate the children from the parents and turn the power over to the state. So yep. Now you're in school, you're being indoctrinated, right? You're being programmed. Yep. And you see how this connection and bond happens with Elliot and E.T. Right. And then what happens? It's almost like this being had to come from another planet who was also a boy separated from his family. Notice yep. the little E.T. freaking out. But he and Elliot become friends. They keep their friendship secret. So it's very aligned with how we have to live now. If we're kids, you have that secret friend. You have to, you know, and then don't misbehave and don't let it be known that you're finding your true self through this friendship, through this lesson of compassion and having friendship, true friendship, because the grownups, the government, they're going to put a plastic bubble over your house and they're going to take it away from you. That's exactly what that was programming people to see.
Yeah. And
you know, eat Reese's Pieces.
Yeah. Eat Reese's Pieces. Sugar.
That, you know, that was like one of the most, obvious and profound product placement movies in history. It was the first time that they, in a big way in Hollywood, did product placement with Reese's Pieces, where you saw the little E.T. character on the Reese's Pieces in white. Oh, mommy, I saw the E.T. movie. I want to meet an E.T. of my own, so I have to eat Reese's Pieces. Programming, consumer.
Yeah.
Amazing. But this is the thing. Waking up from all of that is, and I don't know what it was like for you, but for me, it was like drinking water out of a fire hose.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you how I woke up. First, I was always into esoteric knowledge. So I joined a group that I was meditating and, you know, awakening, and my consciousness was going like this. Second, I went to therapy, gestalt therapy, because I wanted to deal with my childhood. I don't want to be an angry a man, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is I wound up marrying my wife. She's now my ex-wife, but she was from Haiti, black woman who spoke four languages. And one day we got into an argument and she just goes, "You're too American in the way you think." And she had said, "You know, Americans are considered the stupidest people in the world." And I got pissed, you know. She goes, "It's because you've been indoctrinated. It's not that you're dumb. It's you've been indoctrinated." And here, and she handed me an American author, believe it or not, Richard Mayberry. He has 12 or 13 books that just delve into economics and geopolitical influences. And one of his greatest books that I've read, and I recommend everybody get this, it's The 1,000-Year War in the Mideast and How It Affects You Today. And he starts to show you how all the borders in the Middle East were carved up and drawn exactly where there is oil. Those people were one nation at one point. They were one group of people. They weren't, you know, separated. So now we have, instead of Persians and Mesopotamia, we have Iraqis and Iranians, and they can't even go to use their own Gulf that they created, the Persian Gulf, to have their oil, you know, brought wherever it needs to go. And this was all done after World War I. They drew these borders, the alliance of, you know, the United States, France, you know, England, all this, they drew all this. And then you find out years later, you know, this is why they create chaos in the Middle East and what war is really about. A lot of people, they buy into the political nonsense, but war is not what you think it is. And he explains it. And by the way, these are textbooks for homeschooling. Okay. Wow. These aren't crazy conspiracy theories. These are high school textbooks where he pretends to be Uncle Eric answering questions to his nephew, Chris, who has these questions about the founding fathers. One of his other great books, and you can read this in a day, is Whatever Happened to Penny Candy. And he explains how when I was a kid, mm-hmm. I'm a little older than you, I could take $1 and pick out 100 pieces of candy.
Wow.
And then he explains how when the government doubles the monetary supply, what happens is now it takes $2 to buy 100 pieces of candy, and so on and so forth, $3, right. $4, $5. So my parents bought a house in 1979 for, let's see, $56,000.
Wow.
Okay. That house today is worth $600,000. It's not that the price of the house went up. It's not that the house's value increased. What actually happened is the dollar decreased. And if right. you don't understand that, that's what Lisa and I were talking about starting in 1971. This right. is what started to happen. But getting back to this, I started cracking up when you were talking about ET, you know, and you were going in depth to it. I put this in my first book, Liquid Leadership. I talked about how John Hughes films came along and made the outlier, the weirdo, the creepy weird kid, the hero in these stories. And they started to program a new generation, you know, with The Breakfast Club, that it's okay to be filled with angst and they are talking my language. I can hear it. Rap music came along and started to go from really fun, hip, funny stuff to dark and angry and all these things that now we look at and it's like they've elevated criminality. They've celebrated mediocrity. They've started to push an agenda. And folks, you know, Lisa, you and I are old enough to remember when if you got a little tired from work, you could take some time off and you truly felt relaxed. Like you could take a week and do nothing. Today, you can't do that. Okay.
I can.
Yeah. I mean, we're freelance. I've been self-employed since 1987.
But not even that, like unplug, yep. like legit be like, my calendar is blocked and I am going to read books and get tan and chill.
Right.
And fill my mind with information.
Well, they're leading us to something, you know, and getting back to your coaching and love and life and all this, the reality is you have to separate from the matrix if you're going to find your happy place. You have to separate from bullshit. I didn't truly find love in my life when I stopped with that list that said, they have to look like this. They have to have a degree. They have to, and I never cared if somebody had the right degree, but there was this list. And instead, I changed that list to, how do they adore me? How do I feel when I'm around them? What are they into that I'm into? And that's when my current love came along, Tao. And she's into the same stuff I'm into. Whoa, think about that. How did that happen? So unplugging from the matrix, you help people to really just get rid of the illusion and the BS they've been telling themselves. Let's talk about that. Let's go into that.
So what you're describing is a lot of the work I do in the Dating with Purpose program that I do with people. So it's super fun because it calls on a lot of personal power of thought, manifestation techniques. Right. And I do encourage people to be very specific in their list of who they believe their ideal person is. And I give them a free, safe platform. They can be free in this platform to speak it into existence and to write it in their journal. If you are a man and you're, I don't know, 52 years old and you are with yourself, quiet, and thinking on this beautiful woman who is for you, and you say, I don't know, she's between the ages of 35 and 45, probably, and she's probably like 5'5", and she's got gorgeous raven-colored hair, and she laughs, and I can hear her laugh in my head, and I'm like, okay, cool, keep going, and how does that laugh make you feel? It, like, lights me up. It makes me feel like, in my heart, I feel like, oh my gosh, I can, like, do whatever. I could be creative as a man and, like, protect this woman and feel like a man, and I'm like, great, keep going, and so I encourage them to be both balanced, left brain, right brain, when creating this list. Because when you're in that balance, that's the power of manifestation, right? A left brain, right brain balance means I can think about this person. I can feel also this person, mind and heart, united, aligned. Yeah. And then that leads to the manifestation of them when you learn to let it go and say, okay, benevolent creator, you have my person. I just got to get rid of all the stuff in me that's blocking this person from coming. So that's the other step to the work that I do. It's like, let's see what is blocking you from the love that you know exists for you. Could it be doubt and disbelief? You told me about this person, so that means that they exist. And they're like, why? I go, because your creator put it in your mind and in your heart. Therefore, it has to exist.
Yeah.
Right? Like, tell me something else that you created in your life. Where do you live? Well, I live in a, you know, the woman, the man or whatever that I'm coach. I live in a 2-bedroom condo. Okay. How do you think that became? How do you think you were called to go look at a 2-bedroom condo and you felt when you stepped in that that felt like home? So you bought it all the same place. You have this. I always say it's this big walk-in closet in the sky. Wow. Where all of your manifestations exist. And when you line up with your thoughts and your feelings with surrender, that door opens and bam, your blessing comes. So this business of, oh, all the good ones are taken and oh, love doesn't happen to me. I'm 55 years old and oh, to get married again at this time, as much as I'd love it, it can never happen. You are speaking negativity into your own desire. Yes. And therefore, it can never be. It'll remain in the closet in the sky. But when you start to speak, I am married. I am a wife. That's what I would say. I am a wife. I am a wife. Present. And so therefore, my behavior in dating needs to be of a wife. Meaning, I need to have a curfew because a wife does not go out until 4 a.m. shaking her ass with a bunch of guys doing shots of tequila. That's not wifely behavior. And my person is a husband. He's not a bachelor looking for the fun party girl. He's a husband. So I must behave in accordance with that man and that energy in order to attract this man. So when I met my now fiance, soon to be husband, I said, date one, I have to be honest with you about my intentions for dating. And if we match up and we're on the same page, cool, we can proceed. Otherwise, you found a friend in me, no harm, no foul. Like, very cool. Nice to meet you. But here's where I'm at. I am dating because I am a wife and I am calling in my husband. So therefore, there's a behavior track that I am embodying to be in alignment with a woman who's a wife, meaning not having sex with you or anyone for that matter until I am in love with them. So if you're cool with that, awesome. And I know that even if we fall in love and the rainbows and butterflies fall around us, I am not shacking up with anyone unless there's spoken of a commitment, a ring involved, whatever my standard was, right? Yep. This was just for me. It doesn't have to be for everybody, but for me, this is where I was at. And furthermore, I am interested in a God-centered relationship, not religious, very different, but a spiritual binding beingness that we do nothing without that in it. Mm-hmm. So you want to do an extension on your house? Wonderful. God, we want to do an extension on our house. Please guide us through this. Give us the right people to hire. Give us, because alone, you cannot do it. You cannot. You try. I tried for a long time. I always knew there was something greater who loved me unconditionally, but I didn't tap into that ability to work with it until my awakening. Until my awakening. And now the relationship becomes, you know, relationship to Christ consciousness, God consciousness, whatever, you know, that level of mind, commitment to truth. And, you know, when people say, oh, you wear a cross and like, oh, that's religion. I'm like, no. This is telephone, wire, GPS, direct, you know, to the divine. That's what this means to me. And and in the shape of it, it's sacrifice, it's courage, it's compassion, kindness, and commitment to truth, period. Like my t-shirt, right? No masters above me, no slaves below me. Like I am one with consciousness, all of it collected.
Boom.
So once, you know, for me, once I got into that and then was able to bring that mindset into coaching, then it became a much more effective and transformational experience for the people who hire me. It was, wow. It was instead of just like putting a Band-Aid on a breakup, you come away realizing of your mental programming and why I thought I needed a guy like this in the first place and this and that and the other. And then you shed all that.
Yeah.
And you don't, and it doesn't have to take 10 years of therapy. It could be like 90 days, like 90 days. You just realize some stuff and you make new agreements. And I always say to my clients, amazing. Like, now that you have this wisdom, what actions will you take? What new actions can you take? Right now that you have this wisdom that you had a thing in you that attracted alcoholics or people who were addicted to whatever, now that you see what it is in you, what new agreements will you make? Right. And that's where we start to say, okay, now that you know that this magical person exists for you, how do you determine quickly who they are not? What questions do you ask on a date, and how do you ask them in a way that lets the floodgates open and people open up to you, and you know what to listen for. Yeah. And so that this way you can make some very empowered decisions about who you're going to work with, who you're going to be friends with, even people in your family. There are plenty of people in our families where we can say, you know what, I'm going to love you from afar.
Ain't that the truth?
I love you so much. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, but I'm staying here and you can be with it.
We're going to do this over the phone, if that's okay with you.
Exactly.
I'm going to eat a turkey leg, drink my eggnog, and we'll just talk.
Exactly. The thing is, it's so powerful to give people, it's such a gift to give people the permission, the empowered permission to live their life unapologetically on their terms as their creator intended. And I think we're moving, and I feel we are moving into more of that, because all of these systems, all of these institutions, and even you and I speaking, you know, through our own experiences individually, there are still things that are going to come out that are going to be like, whoa, even for us, you know?
Yeah. You know what it is, though? It's the commitment to our deeper relationships. It's a commitment to working with each other. You know, I always said if I got involved with anybody ever again, they had to be committed to the relationship and the health of the relationship. There was no backing down. There was no running away. There was, we're going to work on this shit. We ain't going anywhere. We're getting dirty. We're getting in the muck. We're getting in the mire. You know, because I got an interesting background and so do you.
Uh-huh.
And so it's sort of like, okay, I'm always vacillating between three areas. I used to be the savior. I would come in, I'm going to save you, baby. You know, that was number one. Number two, I attracted angry people who didn't respect what I did, treated me like dog crap and took from me. And I couldn't see that they were scam artists. I had trouble seeing scam artists because guess what? My dad was a little bit of a flim-flam kind of person, didn't know it. I just actually discovered that pattern through my life came from my dad.
Interesting.
It's like, And then my mother being bipolar, I always had way too much compassion when I would attract somebody who was going back and forth all the time. And I'd be like, well, you know, I was trained for this bullshit. I need to upgrade. And so those things I have worked on my entire life because it's programming. We're brought into this world. We get this programming and eventually you say, you know what? I've earned something different. I'm going to take it to the next level. I'm going to, and you can't, folks, if you're listening, ladies and gentlemen, you can't just sit there and go, no more, you know, drunks, no more alcoholics, no more, because subconsciously, energetically, you attract them. So if you don't change your energy, you don't work on the traumas, you don't reprogram the brain a little bit. Okay. You're going to keep attracting them because this is invisible energy that is, you know, Albert Einstein said it best. Our brain is nothing more than a transmitter and a receiver. The rest of us is soul. Okay. Mm-hmm. The thoughts, you know, we have to just decide, are those thoughts coming from me? Are they coming from programming or something outside of me? that's where you have to work on. That's where the dark work comes. That's where the shadow work comes from. That's what we're talking about. I thank God, Lisa, every day I didn't go to a bar to deal with my problems. Okay. And I know a lot of people.
I did.
As soon as a divorce happened, you know, they're out drinking and they're drinking it away. You know, they're medicating their pain. You know?
Well, my thing wasn't like full blown like alcoholism at all, but it was addicted to the superficiality, the party vibe. You know, I knew I would have a few drinks. I'd get a little tipsy, but I knew my limits. I'd switch to water. It was more of the high vibrational energy of music and dancing and just being free and feminine. I was so hungry to be in my divine feminine because I was left brain, right brain imbalanced. Yeah. I was very left brain, like many women are. They're programmed to go, 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 do, 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 list, check, list, check, list, check. It's unfulfilling. You feel exhausted. You can't receive a masculine man, a capable man, if you are in a competitive energy of fight, of resistance. But when I had to do my shadow work and be like, girl, if you want that alpha king man, capable breadwinner, I got you. You don't have to worry about money ever. You want to create and write books and do podcasts and spread love in the world? Have at it, honey. Like, I got you. And you want that type of man, which it took me 50 years to get to that.
Yeah.
With no apology, none. And getting rid of that mental dissonance of the programming. Oh, you shouldn't want that. That's going to make you a gold digger. No, it's not. I know what I bring to the table as a feminine woman. I know how to finally yield to the leadership of a capable, strong man. And I know how to give input, give another angle, another consideration in a way that is beneficial, but also graceful in a feminine way. Yeah. And there is such power in that, where I came to learn that when I am operating in my most feminine, that is when I am seen and felt and received by the man, whether it be client or, you know, husband soon, as the most like an asset, like a true asset. Like, I'm from New York, Bronx, Brooklyn. I can throw down. Trust me, when push comes to shove, I own guns. I know how to shoot them, the whole deal. I can be quite the little warrior. Do I have that balance in me? Absolutely. When it's go time, I can be focused in a crisis and tap into that energy. But then I also can switch it into this just feminine, mushy, sensual, like light of smile and like my love, right? And the right man does not exploit that. They find it to be tremendously helpful and a missing component to their ability to operate at their optimal level also.
I love what you just said, because I noticed the first thing I notice about you is you're perfectly balanced in masculine and feminine energy. You know how to embrace your feminine and use it and just lay back in it. You know, as they say, they lay back in it. And I love Mark, by the way. He was a perfect match. I got to know him. I've been chatting with him a little bit behind him. I'm sure he tells you. I'm like, dude. Yeah.
He said hi. He's like, oh, you're doing a podcast with Brad? Tell him I said hey.
Yeah. Like, hey, I will. What's up? And by the way, you attracted a great guy. You know, I can see you right away because I read energy right away. But I want to get into this. Guys, if you're listening to this, she can help you with your masculine side too, because I had to work on this. My mother was all got to a point in life where she kind of hated men. So she wanted me to embrace my feminine side. You know, I'm an artist. I'm into all that stuff, drumline, musician. So I did that because I wanted to be a good son. But then I read a book called Iron John, which says that men have a tendency to hand their keys to their masculinity, the golden keys, your balls, to your mom when you're little. And then when you get older, you hand them to your wife or your girlfriend, and you expect her to pick up the mantle of your masculinity. And you can't do that. And so what I began to do is, it took time, but when I got into jujitsu, that's when I really just boom, sat in being a man. Don't give a shit. I'm here to help. I'm here to be supportive. I'm here to be strong. I'm here to embrace that. I'm not here to be whiny. I'm not here to be a beta male. I'm not here to be an alpha either. I'm more of a sigma male, a lone wolf. I don't give a shit about anybody else. It's me and my love. Okay. And once I embrace that, and I'm going to be 60 in about 4 months, that's when I started to notice that women were checking me out, like looking me right in the eye. And I don't flirt. I don't cheat. I don't do any of that. But I mentioned it to my girlfriend, who will be my fiance soon. Tao, I said to her, I said, what the hell's going on? Is there something in the drinking water? And she goes, no, you're the silver fox. That's what you are. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm the silver fox. But if you want to make change in your life, if you want to embrace, if you want to have that fulfilled partner in your life that matches you almost to perfection from the God source, you want to call it in, okay? Get in touch with Lisa, because Lisa, I love Lisa's work. I love what she does. I love that she's ballsy and brassy. I also love that she's feminine at the same time. And Mark and I had a discussion. You wore that dress one night. I said, Mark, you did not leave the house. I'm just saying, you didn't leave, because I wouldn't be able to leave the house. He's like, dude, we almost didn't. And I was just rolling.
I know, he's so funny. He's so cute. He like tells me all these funny stories. He's like, just keep doing your thing. It's cool. You know, he's like, I support it all. It's all great.
I was just laughing because his reaction, you know, one guy to another, I wasn't going to bullshit. It's like, dude, how'd you get out of the house with that dress on?
But it's funny because, like, you know, I say to him, I go, listen, you, as you know, it's being with me is like, you know, Sybil.
You just dated yourself, by the way.
I dated myself. Like you get this Lisa, you know, with the Princess Leia, you know, this thing going on with the twirls, because I'm setting my hair to make it wavy and my glasses on. And I'm, you know, in my tomboy, you know, then there's that where I, you know, I put it in a ponytail. Let's go power walking. I played sports as a kid. So he's, you know, early on in the relationship, we were walking and I'm like, hey, do you have a glove, like a mitt? And he's like to play ball. I go, yeah, you played ball. I played ball. Like, we should have a catch.
Yeah.
And he went right into like the Rawlings store at like one of these outlets, bought a glove. He's like, let's do it.
That's awesome.
Like, you're going to get that girl right at like 1 p.m. Let's have a catch. There I am, ponytail softballer, throwing the softball, whatever. And then that night, I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to do my hair. I'm going to be in a dress, heels, thing. And then the next day you're going to see me like bookworm version. Like, I'm into this book. I'm reading this now. I'm jumping into this.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm all about like empowerment through ethics and understanding who operates the world we live in and their, you know, their malevolent, you know, malevolent awfulness of it and the orchestration of it and all that. And then what you can do about it. Right. So, so it's just like this whole wrapped up thing that, you know, I definitely had to learn that attracting these types of men because I am putting out an energy that says this. So we attract based on our energy.
And exactly.
When I coach people and I get like, what's your pattern? Like, what kind of people do you see yourself attracting mostly? Oh, I attract unavailable men. Okay. Well, in what ways in your life are you unavailable to yourself?
Yeah.
And they look at me stunned. And so it begins that inner work of you have to make yourself your best friend, truest love, and disciplinarian. And when you do that, you connect to the creator. That's how you create. I want to know all of this about myself. And the creator's like, oh, I'm glad you showed up. Okay.
Yeah. Finally,
I'm going to light you up.
I wanted to say this earlier because I did a lot of studying on quantum mechanics, you know, quantum physics. Okay. And the key to manifestation. So They can now measure, get this, the tertiary field of your brain. So when you're in your left brain and you're doing math, let's say, or you're analyzing everything, your tertiary field, you know, it goes up, let's say, 15 feet. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they found out when they measured people. Now, you know this about your left brain. Your left brain is where you have language. The left brain has files from the past that sit there, and it bases all its decisions on the future based on those old files. That's why we keep repeating patterns. Now, here's the rub. This is the best part. And Joe Bolt Taylor actually did a TED Talk. When she had a brain aneurysm, she lost the left side of her brain. And she explains this better than anybody else. What happens is the right brain, in order to activate that, you have to open your heart, which comes from creativity, writing, singing, dating, you know, finding the love of your life, making love. And they measured the tertiary field from that. It's 1,000 times bigger.
Wow.
And so what happens is, this is the oddest part about all this, your right brain can feel and understand God. Your right brain can invent completely new things, and your right brain can just collapse the left brain, which is the dominant side that tells us this is reality, even though it's not. In quantum physics, they began to measure all these tiny little atoms, and they kept getting smaller and smaller, and they kept announcing to the world, the atom is the smallest thing. And then they go, oh, oops, we made a mistake. Electrons and protons are the smallest thing. Then a few years later, as the electron microscopes got better, they found out they were completely wrong. They said quarks. And then after that, they said it's photons. Well, what are photons? All photons are light and data. And guess what else they found? When they were observing the electron microscope and observing atoms, somebody decided one day, hey, let's go to lunch. And they forgot to turn off the instruments. And when they came back, they went, oh shit, we've been recording for 2 hours. And guess what? The atoms, the atomic structure, the photons, stopped vibrating and moving when they left the room. And they stopped observing them. That means our reality is created by us observing it and seeing it, despite the fact that everything, even the hard walls around me, are made of light data and are just vibrating at a different level. Okay, so if you raise a child to not be programmed the way we're raised, we're undoing all that.
Yep.
It's possible for someone to pass through walls, okay, if they haven't been programmed.
I just saw this thing where they're like, yeah, what's coming next is we're going to know zero gravity and we're going to be able to levitate.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
I don't like that. That's cool. I want to fly around.
I want the bio beds they've been promising in Star Trek.
Yes. Remember, the med bed, honey, let me tell you what. If there's a program, no more gray hair. Although I'm on the in-between with that.
Well, I'm with Dr. Randy Shannon, and I stopped dyeing my hair. I used to dye my hair for television.
Okay.
And I stopped.
So yours looks amazing.
Oh, thanks. I used to be white all over. She had me on copper and some supplements, and you see it's getting darker. Huh. And she is on copper and a lot of other supplements, and her hair is blonde. She does not dye it, and she's in her mid-50s.
Amazing.
See? And so our technology, it's not only that our consciousness, our emotional stuff, our brains, that we are awakening right now because we're passing through an area that agitates our photonic field. We're all waking up.
5G, but the nutrition, let's go!
Yes. What do they call it? The age of Aquarius or whatever? All this new knowledge is coming in and being downloaded immediately to us. And there's no reason you should be in a bad relationship. There's no reason you should be in with a crappy person who doesn't see you, who doesn't adore you every single day. You wake up, you know, Tao and I'm just really blown away by her because she wakes up and she goes, oh my God, it's you again. You know, and it's like, and we embrace that.
That's like the thing I have, like, I wake up and I go, good morning, I love you. I say And I say it really quiet in case he's still sleeping. And I'm like, you know, toss and turn. And I open my eyes and I see him laying there like, good morning. I love you. So he's doing it back like it's cute. Yeah. Like,
I love you too. Night, can I sleep night, a little bit?
Night, night. I love you. These are the simple, simple things, right? Like when you're in the Matrix, you get all caught up in like the other stuff, you know, the see it, feel like, you know, but like the good morning, I love you, in the night, night, I love you is like, I don't care simple. What house we're living in. We can be in a tent under a bridge. I'm still going to say that to you. It doesn't matter, right? Yeah. It's like, it transcends that physical space. That,
absolutely.
You know, material, feel it space.
It's one soul to another is how I look at it. And if you're with somebody that isn't appreciative of you and loving and supportive, because we're supposed to support each other. You know, there's an old, I believe it's a Muslim parable, and it basically says, what's the difference between heaven and hell? And it tells this long story where this guy goes to hell for a couple of weeks because he needed to be punished. Everybody there is eating with these 6-foot-inch forks and knives, and they can't feed themselves. So everybody's emaciated. And he's like, oh, my God, how does anybody eat it here? And they don't. So he gets to heaven after his stint is over, and he's thinking, oh, finally, I get a decent meal. And he comes down the ramp, and there's the same spread that he had in hell with the 6-foot utensils. He's like, oh, my God, I'm going to starve to death. But the difference was, in heaven, everybody took their fork and fed others. They fed each other. They gave.
Nice.
So it's that difference in consciousness, that little shift. Many of the things that we're talking about today, you might be sitting there going, what the hell are you talking about? It's the esoteric. Okay. It's the things we can't see. You know, a lawyer in a court of law cannot argue about love, because if you can't hold it in your hand and make it tangible, they can't argue it. And yet, we all know, and we've been there, we're sitting in a room reading a book, and we feel the energy of the love of our life on the other side of the room, and we look over, and they've been staring at us, not creepily, by the way, for 2 minutes, with just this feeling of love and joy in their heart, and we feel that. Mm-hmm. We feel that, and that's true, and it's real, and I do believe it's one of the divine pieces that we're given. You know, sure. We're given creativity, love, appreciation, all these things. And that's the fun part about it. Hey, I have a lightning round where I ask you a couple of questions so we get to know you better.
Okay.
In order to wrap this up, let me ask Lisa Concepcion something very powerful. What is it about you that we may not know about you that you love doing or you're into?
I paint my own nails and pedicure and manicure. I don't go to a salon. I do them myself. And I'm in between right now. I took them off, right? Because I'm going to pamper myself and do that myself. And people compliment my nails. And I was taught how to do them by my grandmother. So when I do my nails, it's a connection to her. She passed on, but I always feel that generational energetic connection.
Yeah.
By nice, mani, pedi, DIY. And I have over 200 nail polishes.
Wow. A little obsessed. Yeah, you know, it's funny. You're Latina, and I'm sure grandma, you know, handing down, you know, everything from the culture. You know, I've been to Puerto Rico many times, and it's just like, the food and the El Yonke, and, you know, traveling around. It's very much a part of the culture. And dancing and things like that. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Very, very. So there's that. Little lesson on that.
Let me ask you another thing. What is your favorite memory?
Ooh, my favorite memory, just because like it's being popped into my head right now, was the first night that I had my dog that recently passed, the night I picked him up, and it was our first night together, where it was like, this was my person and you are my dog and we are here for each other and that's it. And he was this little 6-month-old Pomeranian mix thing, cute, and he looked at me like I was put here for you. Jumped on the bed. I had to drive all the way from Miami to North Carolina to pick him up. And he was this little ball of fuzzy love nugget. And he just slept with me the whole night. And it's just, especially that, you know, he recently passed. It is a memory that I just always go to when I miss him. So it's like fills me up with his energy again.
I reached out to you when your dog had passed because we had lost our dog and we had a similar story where I hadn't met Tao yet and Tao was living down in LA. And about 5 years ago, she went to the shelter and they had this little dog that was a Jack Russell Corgi mix with the coloring of a wolf. Like he looked like a little wolf, but they had pulled out all his teeth because, you know, little dogs on the street, sometimes they get sick. They have to pull their teeth. So his tongue was always hanging out. So you had to mash up his food. So he was so traumatized. He didn't respond to his name and he didn't do a lot of things that, you know, dogs usually do. So when Tao and I started dating, she wanted to introduce him, you know, Oliver to me. So we got on Zoom and Oliver looked right at me on camera, like looked right at me. And I go, "Hey, buddy, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah." And he just stared at me. And Tao flipped out because she's like, he's never done that. He's never, whoa. She was like blown away. So I would go visit and they're Vietnamese, her family. So the dog learned to eat like pho, you know, like soup and all the Vietnamese food. So he would dance over that. But Tao would sleep in the mornings and I would just get up and walk him. And I've had many dogs in my life and I taught him leash commands and I got him to respond to his name. And he and I became buddies because I would come home at night after, you know, working or going to a meeting or whatever. And he would jump off the couch and run up to my feet. But then he didn't know what to do after that because he had never been around other dogs or a good owner. So I would just pick him up and put him on my shoulder and walk around the house for the rest of the night. And that was his place, you know. And sometimes he was so cute because sometimes he would want just mommy's love and he would just sit in her lap. And then other times he'd be like, "Daddy, we must go on an adventure." I give him a British accent.
Oh, he has a British accent. That's interesting.
Absolutely. He's Oliver, the dog on the street, you know, begging. So I would do, this is how I knew Tao was for me. She wanted to learn about Dune, the book and the movie, you know, everything. So she got the audio. So I would take Oliver for a walk and I go, "Daddy, you must crawl across the desert with no rhythm," you know, stuff like that, because we lived in Vegas. But dogs are so important. And when he passed, I have never been this upset at a dog, you know, dying. Mm-hmm. And I was in tears. And it was in April 10th. And he passed away at home with us. Mm-hmm. And he died of cancer. But yeah, that was my little guy. So when your dog passed, I was like, "Hey, I get it."
Oh, I know. And I was so... just touched by the outpouring because, as I mentioned earlier, I was very public about my journey and I would film these videos about my life and about what I'm learning and whatever as I'm walking Taz. So I have hundreds of videos of this life of me walking around South Beach and you hear clinging, 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 clinging of his and his collar. And I went back after he passed and I started, you know, in your memories and Facebook and like all these other things, they pop up, right? And I just was like, you know, I need to save this all. I need to, like, this is going to serve me in some way. And in a way for me to serve others, right? Like this journey with these dogs, my whole life, I'm an only child and they were in many cases, a soul that understood me better than humans ever could kind of thing as an only child. I don't know if you relate with that.
I'm an only child. See, I totally get it. My dog King when I was growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had this, you know, this inspiration of, you know, how can I blend in the relationships that I had with these beloved spirit animals that were put here for me. Right. Yeah. And along with my message to the world. So that's kind of what I'm like noodling with now. So again, I'm excited. We'll see. We'll see what creative juices come.
There you go. I have one more question, and this ties into you and I. We kind of tag team sometimes, but you're a conservative like me. And you call people on their bullshit. And sometimes I'm blown away by some of the things that you say, and I back you up, you know, I come in underneath. But dealing, how do you deal with trolls in this day and age? And those of you who don't know what a troll is, it's like when you make a comment on, let's say, The Atlantic for getting a news item wrong, completely wrong. There seems to be this army of people, and they have to be paid because they'll be there all day long giving you a hard time because just calling you crazy and on and on and on. Right. How do you deal with trolls on the internet? Because this, you and I, you know, I just sit there flabbergasted. I get exhausted sometimes because it's like, what in the hell is, you actually get paid to do this, you know?
Right, right. Well, this is where like the public relations and marketing side of me comes into this, because I geek out to all of that. Algorithms. I just love to dissect the Rubik's Cube to see how the colors match up. You know, I like to get to the root of why things are the way they are. And recently I was listening to people who get, you know, getting thrown in jail and censored. And it had happened to me also. And I was like, you know what? I'm a smart woman. I worked in PR. I know how to write in a way that you can get things passed through.
Yes.
Right. So I did for a big chunk of my PR career. This is how in the matrix I was. I did pharmaceutical PR. So I wrote, wrote the press releases. I would look through data, you know, this big data thing. And they'd be like, okay, look through the data and like, let's write a release about, you know, metformin or some, you know, diabetes drug or whatever. And here I am reading through this and I'm like, okay, but like, why are we even doing this for these people? Like three monkeys died. The monkeys died. Why are we even having this?
300 monkeys died. Yeah.
It's a mess. So I then in that life learned that, okay, so when you are giving information, you don't say it as fact. And this is what I apply to Facebook. So if I'm going to give information, I'm going to present it in a way where it's almost like I'm red pilling the trolls. Nice. My interest and my agenda is to red pill, to awaken people. And how do people want to be awakened? Do they want to be thrown? Like if you're laying in bed and you're sleepy, do you want somebody to come with ice cold water and smash it in your face? No. You want to be like, my love, it's 7:30. I'm going to start making breakfast. I love you. And then you're like, my love, it's 7:45. I just want to come wake you up. Okay. You pet their back. Right. And then, okay, same. So
creepy love.
If I was giving tips to people about, you know, how to handle themselves online, it would be the following. Number one, be clear in your agenda. You're not here to fight. I'm not interested in fighting with people. I want to awaken them. Wow. And the best way to do that is to make them question their own matrix.
Yeah.
So I will say something like, it appears to me that ... Lizzo is being used by the entertainment industry to be a source of contention, pitting people against each other. Every time they do a post about Lizzo, it's a fight about she's obese, but she's confident. She's obese. She's confident. It's divisive. Anything these people can do to divide us, I don't care if they're talking about 7-Eleven Slurpees, Lizzo, or, you know, Putin versus Ukraine. Like everything is this versus this, this versus that. So this is the mechanism in the matrix that they created playing out on social media. I see this clearly. So very art of war. When you know thy enemy and you know their moves, you could play in that game, but get people to shift to a new way of thinking by saying, it appears to me that Putin put his money back to gold. Do you know that we used to be gold also until 1971? I wonder what that's about. And then the conversation brings in other awakened people that says, yeah, Lisa, it's about this and this and that and the other. And you're just.
Yep.
But you're doing it in a way where Nobody can press, complain, report, nothing, because I'm not attacking anybody.
You're asking a question. Yep.
Correct.
That is genius.
And I'm not saying it as fact. It's language that I learned in public relations. It appears to me this. It seems as if this. You know, I saw a theory out there that said this. The other thing to keep in mind, every single insult that they throw out becomes powerless the more they use it. So I started to embrace the label of conspiracy theory. Yeah. And one time somebody called me it, and my automatic response is, just out of curiosity, do you happen to know the origins of the expression conspiracy theory or conspiracy theorist? Curious to know what you think on that, what your thoughts are on that. I'm not coming back and hitting them, nothing. It's inspiring them. Google, who created the term conspiracy theorist? Or Alexa, who coined the phrase conspiracy theory? The term conspiracy theory was coined after the assassination of President Kennedy by the CIA to discourage people from questioning a narrative.
Yeah.
Right? Like that right there could red pill people.
Yeah.
Because these people are so in their matrix and they're so in their left brain and they're so imbalanced that, and even right brain imbalanced, where they think, you know, kindness, be kind. Meanwhile, like, be kind, honey, if someone's coming in your house, you have under natural law the right to defend yourself if you think your life is in danger.
Exactly.
Right. And they don't want to hear that. Oh, disarm everybody. Let's all have peace. Doesn't work like that. Sorry.
It never works like that, because there's a lot of people out there who want to beat the tar out of everybody else. What am I going to do? Give them
a hug?
This
whole thing about, like, you know, Hurricane Ian and the recent press conference that DeSantis did. He flat out said there will be no looting. There will be no people taking advantage of other people. I want to remind people that we are a free state and we are a Second Amendment state. So you could be trying to loot somebody's house, steal belongings, and you do not know who is lurking behind the corner with whatever weapon that they have. And
exactly.
He was very right. He didn't say shoot anybody. He didn't say any of that, but he reminded people, you know, F around and find out.
You and Randy need to talk. Dr. Randy Shannon. She's also in Florida. Also a gun toting chick, which is, I got my girlfriend into it. She had never shot a gun in her life. Took her out to the out into the desert with a friend of mine who's special forces, and that's when she fell in love. She's just like, I love this.
It's like, great. It's great.
You want real empowerment?
Yeah.
That's real empowerment.
Yeah, when
awesome.
You know you can defend yourself, it's like, oh my God, it's so amazing. And then also, you respect the power that you have with that weapon. You become, may I never, ever have to use this.
Oh, yeah.
Happy I have it, and I'm prepared to go right to it, but may I never have to.
Yeah. And that's what people don't realize. We're not here to harm anybody. We're here to defend ourselves. And if that means lethal force, then, you know, that's what it is. But I grew up in Pennsylvania, and as soon as we're 10, we get a BB gun, you know, and I learned how to shoot in the Cub Scouts, okay, with a 22 in a prone position, you know, when I was like 11 or 12, and people are horrified to hear that, you know, and I'm like, what are you talking about? No one was shooting anybody when I was a kid.
Right, you know? Exactly. Well, it's like you look at the, you know, old school Europe, kids are at the table drinking wine with their grandparents. It's not, there's no mystique of any of that, right? There's none of that.
But yet,
you know, here in the States, it was like sneaking beer. Like my parents never did any of that ever. Like my dad, here's another fun Lisa fact, masculine energy a bit with a little feminine. So I caught on to the fact very, very young, about 9 years old, that in order for me to have alone time with my dad, quality time alone with my dad, no grandparents involved, no stepmother involved. Love them all, but you want your one-on-one time with your daddy.
Yeah.
I had to become knowledgeable about football. Why? Because my father had season tickets to the New York Jets. And if I could withstand the elements, it would be he and I alone at these games.
Jets Stadium is cold.
Shea Stadium was freezing, and then we moved over to the Meadowlands, and it was freezing even more.
Freezing, yeah.
Freezing, ridiculous freezing, but I have great memories of going to games with my dad. So I had to learn the rules of football. Like, we're talking winning money at bars, naming all members of the New York Stock Exchange. That was like my go-to hustle.
Wow. There's the factoid that we needed. You are a Jets and a football aficionado. Holy crap. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. I mean,
you know, a lot of fun moments. Yet to see a Super Bowl win in my lifetime. I missed Namath by like that much. Two years.
I saw it. I watched it.
That must have been glorious. Him running with that number one, you know, that thing.
Yep.
And the best with him with the fur coat dating Raquel Welch. Come on. She took him, to the Oscars.
That was an era of glamour that we will never get back, because when I was a kid, only the beautiful people wound up on TV, only the most whatever, you know, and that didn't mean we weren't, we didn't have self-worth on ourselves. What it meant is those are famous people and we know they're famous and we like them, but they're at a distance. They don't affect our lives. And then later,
I used to think the same. And then I started working in New York City and I'm at Duane Reade. And there's Uma Thurman in front of me online with like a box of tampons and like, you know, shaving cream. And I'm like, these people are just like me. Like, what are we doing?
Susan Sarandon loved to walk her kids with the baby carriage and everything braless.
Okay. Nice.
If you're a New Yorker, please don't be offended by what I just said. That was Susan Sarandon's jam. Okay. Sweatshirt, hair pulled back, sunglasses, and nothing. Okay. You're like, hi, Miss Sarandon, Mrs. Sarandon. We were just, I live near her, Merrill Street.
There's been like such an awakening too with the whole celebrity thing. Like, they are falling off their perch of might by the minute.
Well, you know, you'd have to be a hell of a hypocrite to star in how many movies where you're shooting guns and then run around and tell us we can't have guns. Right. You know, there's, wake up from the matrix, folks. That's all I can say. I can't command you. You just have to start listening to news you don't like and people like us who are trying to tell you stuff instead of sitting there and going, why the hell do these people think like this? How could they possibly believe that? Why don't you do a little research into why we believe what we believe? Because I tell all my liberal friends, we have the exact same values. I love my fellow man too. I don't care if you're gay or straight. I don't care. I said, but when you start to force crap onto me and you don't question why suddenly out of nowhere, everybody wants to be the opposite sex or whatever. If you don't question what atrazine does and the guy who created it, who started to say, hey, we need to stop using the chemical I discovered because it causes gender swapping. When you don't question, you know, why your money, it doesn't go any further. Why they keep talking about the Great Reset. You know, I talked about Klaus Schwab one day and somebody said, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, on and on and on. And I said, oh, really? Here's the speech where Klaus Schwab introduced Joe Biden. And they're like, you know, they don't talk after that.
Yeah.
You know, and so start questioning life. I mean, this is about relationships, this show, but reach out to Lisa, please. Start following her. Go to Love Quest Coaching. She is also on Instagram, Facebook, Facebook groups. I'll make all the connections in the show notes. But all I can say is thank you, Lisa, so much for being on the show. Finally, we get to meet. If you're ever in Denver or Las Vegas and we're ever over in on the East Coast, we'll look you guys up.
For sure.
We're going to have a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, you, me, and Mark, and Tao. So definitely. Anything you want to say before we close?
Well, you know, I love to give people gifts. So like my love language is gifts and words of affirmation. So like, tell me nice things and buy me presents and I love you forever. So I like to give a gift too. And so when you go to hang with me at lovequestcoaching.com, there you will find a button, you press it and you can get a free love life assessment done with me.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Super fun.
A love assessment. This is awesome. Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Answer a bunch of questions. You could get as detailed as you want. And then within a couple of days, depending on how many of them I get back to everybody individually.
Awesome. Hey, everybody, get your tuchus over to lovequestcoaching.com. Since you're a New Yorker, I have to use all the Yiddish terms. We get so used to them. Get your free assessment, my friends. Lisa, an honor to have you on Awakened Nation. I hope everybody falls in love with your style and the way you do everything. Big shout out. Give a hug to Mark. I love him. He's awesome. He and I are on the same wavelength as well. Yep. So, hey, everybody, tune in next week for another fantastic episode of Awakened Nation. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. This was great.
Thank you so much for being a big part of the Awakened Nation movement. This is how you can help me and our extraordinary guests. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please share it out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let's grow this movement by word of mouth. Our success will be because of you. Thank you, and see you next week.